Across the world, coastal cities are at risk from storm surges and rising seas related to climate change. One report estimates that more than 300,000 coastal homes in the U.S. alone, with a collective market value of some $118 billion, are at risk of chronic flooding within the next 30 years. Some states have also seen deadly, catastrophic wildfires and drought related to climate change. We wanted to know what cities are doing now to better protect people and property. We reached out to two experts. Susie Torriente is the Chief Resilience Officer and Assistant City Manager for Miami Beach, and Rachel Cletus is Policy Director for Climate and Energy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. I started by asking Susie Torriente in Miami Beach, among the places most vulnerable to sea level rise, what the city's doing now to try to mitigate that risk.
It's important to start understanding your risk, understanding the science. And that's exactly what we're doing here in South Florida through the Southeast Florida Climate Compact. Over the last 10 years, we have been sharing information and collaborating and developing regional tools so that cities like Miami Beach can start to adapt to climate change and invest in our aging infrastructure. So Miami Beach is dealing with this in a couple of different ways. You may have seen our stormwater pumps and our elevated roads, and we've been investing in our seawalls, our public seawalls. And that's actually very visible and very prominent. So when we realized that we were experiencing these sunny day flooding and we were experiencing these high tides, we, as a city and a city commission and the residents, decided to make the changes and to adapt. So we have a 10-year, about $600 million stormwater program. But in addition to that, we're looking at our land use code and zoning, and for all new development, we're requiring development to be built higher than the FEMA-based flood. We're actually going to a foot to 5 feet of freeboard. So we're making those kinds of changes so that we can adapt and invest in our private stock of buildings as well.
And for some streets, you're literally raising the roads up?
Absolutely. In some areas of the city where we're lower lying, more vulnerable, and that's on the west side of the island, some roads are being raised. The most pronounced is maybe at about 2 feet. In other parts in the area, it could just be sloping up just a little bit as we replace our aging stormwater pipes and our gravity system to this pump-based system.
Susie, voters have approved new funds for climate resilience, some $200 million from a recent ballot measure. But what kind of pushback, if any, have you gotten from residents who might worry that this is an overreaction or an overreach?
Well, the voters approved that really overwhelmingly. And I think because the city had a very good and strong outreach and education campaign, and we had a very public vetting of all the different projects. Where we have gotten pushbacks is as we go into specific neighborhoods and as we start to design a particular road, we do get questions from individual homeowners because they want to understand, you know, how is this going to affect the look and feel of my house and my yard and my entry, and how will these projects affect flooding on private property? So as we're going into the different communities, we are talking to individual residents. We are easing those tensions that people feel when you're talking about probably one of their most important assets, their home.
Well, speaking of that most important asset, as I understand it, most of the seawalls are on private property, the majority anyway. What kind of carrot do you have for private property owners to try to convince them, hey, you've got to take action here?
One of our key messages is that we're in this together. And as we start to make investments in the public realm, we do encourage business owners and residents to, you know, start looking at their property, understand their elevation, understand what they need to do to reduce their own risk. Mm-hmm. And for seawalls, we actually do have criteria that's adopted by city commission on the height of the seawalls, looking towards the future to help protect themselves.
And Rachel Cletus at the Union of Concerned Scientists, to you, I mean, you're trying to convince the public to change and to take some fundamental action. At the same time, you know, cities don't want to alienate businesses, developers, and investors that they have to work with and that they want to invest in jobs and infrastructure. But how do you raise alarm and win hearts and minds without seeming alarmist?
Well, here's the reality. We still have time and our choices matter greatly. And I think that's the conversation that we want to invite with a wide range of stakeholders, including folks whose homes are at risk, as Susie just pointed out, because just giving people bad news is not enough. We really have to create the space for solutions, for options, for the what next piece of this. It's a huge challenge, no doubt. But we need to move through this together as a nation. And I think the starting point for these conversations is the fact that this is not news to people on the front lines of this risk. They're seeing the flooding. They're seeing the wildfires, the droughts, the extreme heat. So it's about bringing solutions into those places.
I just couldn't agree more. You don't scare people into action. I think you inform people so that they can start to understand and manage the risk. And that's exactly the approach we're taking here in Miami Beach and in South Florida. And what we're doing here needs to be replicated throughout the country.
Former UN Chief Ban Ki-moon recently warned that the current efforts to protect coastal cities are falling far short, that the world's biggest economies invested $25 billion on adaptation in 2014, but lost many, many times that to floods, droughts, storms, and wildfires. What do you think is needed to get policymakers and mayors to invest more?
Well, I think the first most important thing is to understand the science and the risks that are coming our way very clearly. And we've seen two authoritative reports in the last year, one from the IPCC and one from the U.S. federal agency's fourth National Climate Assessment, sort of lay out that science very clearly, both the fact that the impacts are already here and now, and that if we fail to take concerted action to limit our carbon emissions, these impacts are going to grow exponentially. So that's a really important starting point, understanding the risk and the time frames that we have available to help address these risks. We need to act, and we need to act quickly. The U.S. hasn't done enough yet at the federal level. Local elected officials are taking notice and are trying to do things, but it's happening in a very patchwork way right now. We need federal leadership so that the resources are available to all communities. We've also got to make sure that we are sharing the tools and resources that communities need, first of all, to understand the risk and what their options are to help mitigate against that risk.
Susie in Miami Beach, is climate change proofing, attracting, or repelling investors and businesses from these vulnerable cities?
I think it's attracting. I mean, I was just talking to the Greater Miami Chamber this morning, and, you know, their approach to the challenges of climate change, it's really opportunities for businesses to be innovative and to invest. And so you can drive around Miami Beach, you see new construction, you see sales of real estate continuing to break records. So I do think, again, that it's a risk that's out there, but our eyes are open to it and we're doing something about it.
Susie, what's your biggest challenge when you're trying to convince folks to take action?
I think the biggest challenge was alluded to a little earlier, that action is happening at a very local level, and we do need other partners at the state and the federal level. Miami Beach is fortunate, and we have a healthy tax base, and we have residents and elected officials that are willing to take on additional debt. But maybe other smaller cities, maybe they don't have that same tax base, and they could benefit from more resources at another level.
And Rachel, to you, you've seen how cities in both red and blue states are dealing with this and trying to be proactive in mitigating risks of climate change. Is it becoming less political?
Look, climate impacts don't distinguish between red states and blue states. They're unfolding all around our country right now, as the National Climate Assessment just highlighted. And that means that people all around the country are looking for solutions, whether they call it climate change or they call it high tide flooding. They're looking at the same problem and they're trying to find solutions. And that's the real opportunity here. We do need federal leadership, though. We need more resources. Many places just don't have the funding to come up with the resources they need to solve this problem. And we also have a real danger here of some very inequitable outcomes where communities of color, disadvantaged communities, end up bearing the disproportionate brunt of these impacts. So we've got to make sure that we're not just harnessing federal resources, but that we're targeting them to communities in an equitable way so that people don't get left behind.
Rachel Cletus is Policy Director for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Susie Torriente is Chief Resilience Officer and Assistant City Manager for the City of Miami Beach. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.